Greetings, Game Pass or past listeners. I just want to give you a quick heads up. We did the thing again where we had a write-in and we ended up talking about it for like 45 minutes. So we're going to break that out into another episode so that way people that just want to hear about Expedition 33, that's all you're going to get in this episode. And then we're going to publish another episode that talks about the Xbox price increases and sort of how we feel about that, as well as the implications on the market. And enjoy Expedition 33. Now time for a very long expedition version of Game Pass or Pass, the podcast where we play games on Microsoft's Game Pass service, tell you which games to pass into a friend and which games to just, you know, parry, dodge, and just run on by. I'm Corey. I'm joined by the man who still doesn't know his class, Basher.
Are you calling me a low class individual?
No, I'm saying you don't know like what class you are in an RPG.
Are you suggesting you're higher class than me, sir? That's racism.
I mean, sometimes.
Okay, well, at least you admit it.
I don't know where I'm going with that. I mean, I have a 4090. You don't, so
get good, guys.
That's all it takes. These, I mean, that's like the price of a car now. Like, I have a car in my computer.
Yeah, how much are they going for right now?
4090s, I think, are still like 1600. That's but ridiculous. 5090s, on the other hand, I believe there's a version out there for like 28 that you can find regularly.
So, $2,800.
It's a $2,000 MSRP for the Founders Edition, but you can't get the Founders Edition, A. And B, for the third-party cards, you know, they're going to have their markup and stuff, so... The 5080, which is $1,000, I believe you can get for, I think there's like a $1,300 or $1,400 version that's somewhat regular. But that's the world that we live in now. So
that's insane.
But that has nothing to do with Claire Obscure Expedition 33, which is what we are here to talk about. But first, did you know that you can let us know what you think about 5090s, 49? Let us know what graphics card you have. 574-651-9256. And I'm second guessing myself now. Is that the number? 651-9256. That sounds right. That's not. I mean, I should know this. I should definitely know this. 574-651-9256. Sure do. And at the end of this episode, we're going to be doing a little bit of a write-in. So, but Claire Obscure Expedition 33, we've played it. Chances are you've probably heard about it. It's now time to talk about our opinions of it. But first, here are the details. Year by year, she erases us. Once a year, the Paintress wakes and paints upon her monolith, paints her cursed number, and everyone of that age turns to smoke and fades away. Year by year, the number ticks down and more of us are erased. Tomorrow she'll wake and paint 33, and tomorrow we depart on our final mission, destroy the Paintress so she can never paint death again. We are Expedition 33. Claire Obscure Expedition 33 is a groundbreaking turn-based RPG with unique real-time mechanics, making battles more immersive and addictive than ever. Explore a fantasy world inspired by Belle Epicoque, France, in which you battle devastating enemies. Tomorrow comes with only 1 year left to live. Join Gustav, Mael, and fellow expeditioners as they embark upon a desperate quest to break the Paintress cycle of death, follow the trail of previous expeditions, and discover their fate. Get to know the members of Expedition 33 as they learn to work together against impossible odds. Experience the debut game from Sandfall Interactive, fully realized in Unreal Engine 5 with stunning graphics and a heartbreaking soundtrack. This is available on Xbox Series X and S as well as PC. Does feature Xbox Play Anywhere. I've played on both versions, so I can say it does work quite well. Where's my How Long to Beat? We've got a How Long to Beat of a main story of 26 hours, main and extras of 39, and a completionist of 60. Claire Obscure Expedition 33. Let's talk about it.
I remember this game from the showcase. This is one of the ones we were pretty pumped about.
You know, it's like every guy, I always mix them up, but like there was Towerborn and Flintlock. Like, those were the games that I remember that were not like your main, you know, not your Dooms, et cetera. That was like, what is, like, what was that? That looks awesome. But what I will say is like, this one was the most, which is ironic. When I saw Flintlock, it was like, I can see that. Like, that's gonna come through. Like, it doesn't look unbelievable. Tower World, like, that just looks unique. But when you saw Expedition 33, it's just like, whoa. Like, it looked way too good. It's like, what's the story here? What's the catch? Like, is the game 2 hours long? Like, what is it? You know, like, how can the game look that good? And on the other side of it, yeah, so it's interesting. But yeah, that's where it was debuted last year. And that's the other thing. It was only about a 1 year drive up to this one. And here we are. So.
And I mean, just right off the bat, the game does play as cool as it looks. And that's something that's like, super hard to do.
I think we just have to spoil this one. Like, because the chances are you do know. This game is phenomenal. Like there is absolutely under no situation you should not at least check out this game. And that's, I think that is the story of this game. Number one is like, we looked at it last year. It's like, there's no way it's that good. And up to the delivery of it, you and I were very skeptical. And then the price came out, it was $49.99. It's just like, it's what's going on here. And I remember playing it and you weren't playing it yet. And I needed to tell somebody, and I was just like, dude, oh my God, it's so good. I need to tell somebody that this game is phenomenal. And then, yeah, that's, oh God, this game is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it starts swinging right out the gate in terms of the gameplay for sure. I mean, like, this is definitely an RPG for people who sort of, I mean, this is not a backhanded compliment whatsoever, but the RPG that for people that don't like RPGs.
Yeah.
And I mean, and only in the sense that when we tell someone there's a turn-based RPG coming out, I start to roll. People start to like groan a bit, you know. Like, it's like, is it going to be one of those? Is it a love letter to Chrono Trigger yet again, the 54th million one? But like, no, this gameplay absolutely is stellar. I mean, like, it definitely is in a league of its own, and I really appreciate that these RPGs are coming out now. They're starting to add different mechanics, different flares to their turn-based systems. So for so long, like, turn-based combat has been, I mean, essentially either boring or just a means to an end to get through story and characters. So I'm really glad to see that certain games like this, or I'd even say like Chained Echoes, like, just kind of adding things that isn't kind of just Mario RPG, that isn't just Chrono Trigger. It is its own thing.
And I think part of that is that the franchises that you would expect to innovate on these are abandoning it. You know, like, Final Fantasy is not a turn-based game anymore. Like, that was the one, right? That was the mainstream one. If you knew what Final Fantasy was, it's a turn-based RPG. And they've been getting away from that very slowly, you know, even starting all the way at 13. And with 16, and I honestly think 16 is a mid-game. But the main reason is because, like, it's not turn-based, and I don't think it's a very good hack and slash either. You know, like, it's weird. But granted, I'm not a Persona person. You know, like, I don't like the aesthetic of Persona. So there are games out there, but those mainstream ones just aren't doing it anymore. So when this one came along, it was very, very interesting. I disagree, but like, what I will say is that there's not a lot unique here in Clair Obscur in terms of everything that in this game has probably been done before, but but everything is derivative, but it's one of those things where it takes everything and it plucks it so eloquently and brings it all together in a way that is just like, you don't really care. Like, you don't think about it. It's like, no, like, all these systems just work phenomenal. It's like, yeah, the Lumino system's here, and that's totally ripped from Lost Odyssey, but you don't really care, you know, like, because it put its own spin on it. And it's just, yeah, let's set it up a little bit. So like, the game starts out, minor spoilers, you know, it starts out with a heartbreak kind of thing. And so the details are like, we're in the story, and I'm only going to go through like the first like 2 hours here. So if you're, you know, on the fence, whatever, I'm not going to spoil anything, you know, major. So where this game hooked me was a lot of people were hooked, I think, from that initial Gustav's fiance, or, you know, lover, whatever, former lover is basically Thanos, you know, kind of thing. And it kind of hits you right at the start. And you're kind of into this expedition and you want to know what's going on. And Mael and Gustav, right away, you can sort of get that father figure or sort of, you know, Ellie and Joel situation of looking out for her kind of thing. And then they get to this island and people just start getting destroyed, like murdered by someone who is clearly older than 33. And it's like, wait a minute, what? Like, the game hooked me right there. It's just like, wait, like, you're already going against your core principle of this story, and it should not have worked as well as it did. But for whatever reason, I did not expect an old dude with a cane to come out and basically Sephiroth everybody. Like, I did not anticipate that at all. And it grabbed me from that point. And I was hooked.
That's the funny thing too. And that's why I want to start off with the gameplay. And I'm probably going to focus more on the gameplay here, because that's really what sells everything else. The gameplay and also the beautiful aesthetic. I mean, I think every gamer at this point is a sucker for that French style of kind of dirty beautiful. I forgot, it's a certain time period that this aesthetic comes from. I forgot, there's a name for it. I forgot what it was, but Liza P had it as well. People love that art style the same way. To make my point by touching on what you say, just a
French Revolution little bit earlier. What you're looking for?
Not even. No, it was like the beautiful period or something, or the beautiful era, is what the French call it. In terms of artistic style and fashion and stuff like that. To use something you said earlier to touch on to make it my point. It's unique in a sense, but also super derivative in a way that is really cool. That I love seeing people play this game, pick up this game. I'm getting text messages saying like how great it is, how cool it is, and have you played this yet? Have you got to this part yet? And it's like, there's an old dude with a cane, he's beating up people. That's crazy, right? And I'm like, yes, it is, and I agree. And also, this is the most corny anime melodrama you can ever. And it's in all of these things, but it's in all the games you see quite a bit. But what makes it work, and it's a hard thing about getting people into RPGs who aren't in RPGs or turn-based RPGs specifically, it works because there's something pushing you through this. There's a beautiful art style, just amazing music, and then that gameplay characters doesn't ever characters stop. Like
the, yeah.
So
we'll stick with gameplay, because like I said, I don't want to go too deep in the story, and I'll sort of, when I wrap up, I'll go with, I'm gonna do my best to be spoiler free and talk about why the story for me ended up being not as important as the gameplay, because I fully agree, and like I think it's kind of ironic actually, or you know, bold to say like we made addictive gameplay, and then like on the post of this, I'm like, yeah, you did. Like, I don't know what it is about the parry system, because it's not unique. It's not new. I don't know if it's the fact that if you do your perfect parries, you get that counterattack that is just like, I've seen it 1,000 times, but 1,001, I'm still just like, that's incredible. Like, I love it every time.
It's aesthetic and art style. It goes a long way. Yeah. I mean, it's just like you mentioned Persona earlier. It's a lot of people play that game and talk about mechanics that are in every other game, but Persona, when you hit a critical in Persona, it looks and feels a lot better than every other title. When you hit a counter in this game, not only for me, it's two things. Not only does it look and feel amazing, but there's actual real consequence to it. There's weight to it, and then there's a feedback in game to where it's not just turn based anymore. It's not just I'm a higher level or lower level. It's I don't care what level I am. If I don't get hit, I can beat you. Like it's then becomes a different game on top of the just turn based aspect of it.
It's got that Dark Souls in it. You know, like this game has a lot of Dark Souls in it in terms of just like feel as well, like enemy design, as well as that exactly what you're talking there. It's like, if I get good enough at this game, like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm unstoppable kind of thing. And that's, I understand that mentality from Dark Souls people. And I understand that, you know, like, why people think that's awesome. And I think it is too, but this sort of brings it forward in a way that I think more people can access it that way. Like, people that I never would have expected, if I just would have got that parry, I would have been fine. You know, like, but I didn't. So I got hit. And it's like, it's this addictive nature of that Souls feeling of just like, if I just would have done this, I would have been fine. So I got to go back and I got to do it because I know I can do it. And then there's the aspect of the dodge mechanic. So like, you can either dodge or you can parry, but the dodge has a larger window of it on it. And the parry, you have to be far more precise kind of thing. So it's got that, also that learning curve of it, even though I'm stubborn and I'm like, I'm dodging never, you know, like, no, parry all the way. Even though if it's a brand new enemy, I've never seen it before. And I think that's like, it's that push and pull of, should I be dodging? Should I be parrying? And even though it's an RPG, like you said, it's active now. And what I will say is, like, I think when I heard about Final Fantasy 13, this is kind of what I had in my head. I didn't know it at the time, but like, I think this is the actual evolution of an active time battle system. And I think it just did it so much better than what Final Fantasy did. Like, Final Fantasy was just like, I don't know, press this button to change what you do, I guess. I don't have at it, you know, like, press the button. And here it's like, no, we're going to actually, yeah, we're going to put you in the middle. And I like Final Fantasy 13. Don't get me wrong. I'm one of those people. But I think this is like the first time it's like, this is what I expected out of a active time-based system. And the same thing with like FF7R, like, those games, I like the combat system in those games, but this feels more like a blend of a real time combat system and a turn based kind of thing. I think you could argue that it's actually far more, the turn based might not be necessary. That's kind of like a few things that I've read online. Like, is this really necessary? Like, why can't I just like do this? It's like, yeah, but that's not the point. But yeah, so that's the combat, and like you said, it's addictive, and we haven't even gotten into the, you know, the Luminos system and the way this game sort of, the way that you get your perks and all the different, I won't say classes, but each character has their own thing. Like, Lune is sort of your mage. You've got Mael, who's a stance-based person. Gustav, who is more of your kind of heavy, but as well as, what's the word I want to use here? Help me out. How would you describe Gustav's combat style?
I mean, he's Cloud.
Yeah, there you go. That's great. He's Cloud.
Basically.
Sorry, I was choking on coffee. Yeah, so it's got characters that you want, but also for me, I think everybody, like, you're going to find your rhythm the way that you do with like a turn-based game, and you're going to find your stances so are you like me? Is Mael like your go-to, or who's your go-to?
I kind of switch it up at this point. I don't really have a main go-to character in terms of combat focus, only because I'm nearing the end of Act 2 right now. And even by the end of Act 1, I gotta say, like, I didn't feel the need to switch. I was having trouble or whatever. It was more or less, I just like the play styles of each one of these characters. I just want to go through them all. And then the game actually makes it quite possible. And it's sort of a double-edged sword here because the game is so fun and addictive and easy to level up that you can pretty much max out some characters you can max power a lot of characters pretty early on. So, like, for me, like, because of that, I didn't really have a necessarily favorite per se. I was kind of like, okay, that's enough of you, mage girl. Let me go to the other girl. And then enough of you. Let me go to this guy. And like, I'm not trying to name names because some of the spoilers, but like, you do get a character that's more of a Pokemon trainer type of guy. So I'm like, let me try you out. And like, he ends up being pretty kind of fun, but you have to get his powers or his abilities, you have to defeat enemies with him in your party. So I thought that was kind of neat too. So like right now, he's kind of my, not even my go-to, but just kind of like the guy I'm having fun with right now, because he has so many different abilities.
Yeah, and that's, I think that it's a blessing and a curse, like you said, a double-edged sword of, the game is easy to manipulate. Like if you've played, you know, your old school Final Fantasies, you know, 7, 8, and 9, like you can kind of break those games. And I think this is designed to be that way. And it, and yep, it's not that hard to do. Yeah. And that's, I think that's a plus, because I know people clown on Final Fantasy VIII a lot and for good reasons, but like one of the best things about that game as a kid was like figuring out the junction system and figuring out that you can just destroy this game if you know how to do it, you know, like you become unstoppable. And like, yeah, like that defeats the purpose. And if you go online and read about it and you just do that, like, yeah, that's no fun. But discovering that organically is a completely different story. And that's where like the Lumino system in here comes into play of just like you said, by the end of Act Two, I was pretty much unstoppable. Like I had figured out a flow with the characters that I had of just like, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to parry into this. And as long as I play okay, you know, I'll be fine. And it was, it's, that's just fun. You know, it's fun breaking an RPG. And I don't think that's a flaw against the system. I think that's, it was deliberately designed that way. And I'll agree with you too. It's also like that character that's more Pokemon-like, he's the way that you have to go about sort of collecting his abilities is a difference than everybody else, you know? So like it gives you a reason to go back and fight other things, but as well as keep him in your party going forward. So you're constantly sort of switching people in and out. If you want to, you don't have to either. Like if you find your main crew that you like, you don't have to switch anybody out. Just keep those main people and you'll be fine. You can totally, you know, you can Mario RPG it if you want, like just keep your main three people and just I'm done, you know? And that's, the fact that they're able to do all that, and they also did something very clever of like sort of, even if you break this game, they're going to gate you until the end of Act Two on purpose,
yeah,
basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that was, at first I was confused until I figured, I was like, oh, okay, that makes total sense. And then I was like, that was actually pretty clever. You know, like it's kind of annoying at the time, but it also sort of tells you artificially like, okay, you're over leveled, knock it off. Like, like keep going kind of thing. So yeah, it's the mechanics of it and the way they all blend together is it's just fun. Like it reminds me of those old school RPGs. And I think the main factor for me and the key to all this is that this is only a 40 hour game for most people. You can get through it in 30. If you want to do everything, it's 60. But like by the time that you start breaking the game and you're figuring these things out, like it's constantly moving you along to where by the time you get to Act Three, you do kind of have like a decision to make. It's like, okay, do you want to go to the end or do you want to sort of find out what else is going on? And either answer is correct kind of thing. But at that time, it feels like a natural flow because you're like 20 hours in. So like you feel like you started to break. It's like, no, I'm good. You know, I'm good. I'm going to go see the end of this game and see what happens. Or you're like, no, I want more of this. Like I want to see exactly what's going on in all these places. And then it sort of rewards you for doing that because you start getting more story, you start getting more abilities, and it's the throughput and the playtesting of this, I think, is actually key in just that it moves you along, it doesn't overstay its welcome, and it's I've been talking for a while now, so
yeah, that is all very good points because I don't really know how they I don't really know how to describe how they were able to so well pace this story out, because my biggest issue with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth was wonderful, wonderful graphics, story, music, characters, whatever. My biggest issue with it was there's one story that they were telling with one plot line and it was stretched for 60, 70, 80 hours. And you're doing so many different things in between. I kept thinking, like, do I get any more story eventually? I never got that feeling in playing Expedition, even though I was doing so many other things in between. Like, to the main goal of killing the painter, in between that, you can do quite a bit of things. You can go quite a few different places, battle, fight a bunch of overpowered enemies, do whatever. But the game does something to where you never lose sight of the main goal. There's always something. You said like it kind of gatekeeps you. I feel like it does a good job of forcing that pacing of, all right, you're getting a story moment right now. I don't care what you're doing, like what you've been doing right now. You're getting an exposition dump. You're getting some character feedback. You're getting some interactions, and then you can continue on. Like even like when you have to camp in the overworld, you have the option there to get a recap of the story, get a refresher on where you need to go, what you need to do, and talk to your party members. It does a good job of just keeping your head in the game, even though your gamer brain is like, oh, there's a monster over there, I want to fight it.
Yeah. And it's, I think part of that magic is the, I'm gonna say the story because like duh, but it's the overall sort of world building of this, of being Expedition 33, and sort of a lot of that context that you're getting, especially in Act Two, like once certain characters are introduced and you start learning more, like you're always sort of on the heels of a different expedition. And so even when you're doing a side quest, sometimes you don't know it's a side quest because you're always finding things from these other expeditions. And like, it's not like groundbreaking. Like it's not like Witcher 3 level, like where every side quest is just like, yo, I don't know if this is the main quest or not. It's not like that, but it's, you're always getting these little tidbits of information. So, and it always ties into the main story somehow, but then you get that main cutscene. You're like, okay, now I'm on the main quest, but you just don't, I don't say you don't know, but it almost doesn't matter, I guess.
The funny thing is, like, the more we talk about this right now, the more it sounds like they just get the basics right. Like it's a mind blowing game, but at the same time, it's very basic. I think of games we spoke about before on this podcast, and I won't remember the name of this one specific one. It was fairly recent, but it was just trying to do too much. It was like it was that one game. It was like we got real Kingdoms of Amalur vibe, where you can like the girl can like freeze things.
Oh, Eternal Strands.
Yeah, there we go. No, not even Eternal Strands, but that's another one. Was it Eternal Strands?
That was our most recent. There was Atlas Fallen, but that wasn't Kingdoms of Amalur. That vibes. Eternal Strands was the one that we talked about. Kingdoms of Amalur, I'm pretty sure.
No, yeah, you're right. But what's the one where the girl like you can freeze the enemies, or you can use your fire ability. You climb.
Yeah, that's Eternal Strands.
Is it okay? I missed the other one. But anyway, but games like Eternal Strands, like where they're trying to do so many different things, there's so many different mechanics, and it just never all comes together, never all gels. Whereas something like Expedition 33 is really just basics. It's basic storytelling. It's great music, great atmosphere. Like you said earlier, like the combat is as great as it is. They're not doing anything super brand new, but they're just doing everything really well. This is a great example of when you're making a video game, you have, instead of putting 30 things on the board and saying, let's make all 30 things great, it's like, let's put 3 things on the board and focus on these 3 things. And that's the feeling I get from Expedition 33, because there's really no system, no mechanic that does not work well with each other.
Yeah. And even when you look at like the overworld and stuff like that, and it's, I don't say they cheated, but it's like, I think part of it is that they had they're drawing from a lot of inspirations, you know, like they're drawing from Final Fantasy for even the overworld. It's like, you've got this, like when you really sit down and think about it, it's like comical, like you're these like 3 little people in this overworld map. And like, if you really think about it, the perspective of that is insane. Like it's, you are giants in this world essentially, but like you don't think about it because you've seen this before, you know, like you've seen this in Final Fantasy 7 and 8, you've seen it in 9 when you're running all over. It's like they pulled from all these things, but they made it their, they didn't even make it their own. They just made it well. Like you said, that's the key, is that everything that they drew from is is maybe derivative, but they do it well. And that even comes down to like the engine and the graphics. Like Unreal Engine 5 is one of those, just, it is a heavy engine, man. Like it's also like super not well optimized half the time. Like Oblivion Remake is a mess. Like you could argue that that's a, because of the underlying code, but like even Avowed, like that game ran mostly okay, but it was also like extremely heavy. And any other Unreal Engine 5 game is always just like, you better be ready for some glitches, and you better be ready for some, you know, your computer's gonna melt kind of thing. And while this game is heavy, but like I had no problems. I never crashed to the desktop. I never really ran into like weird hitching or like, you know, stuttering shader loading and stuff like that. Like all those things that you expect from an Unreal Engine 5 game just aren't here. And that's, I don't know how they did it. Like, because everybody else can't seem to do it. And I know there's a lot of talk about this was only made with 33 people, but like there was contractors and stuff like that. But still, like, why is it that this $50 independent title can figure it out from the gameplay down to the engine? And it just seems like nobody else in this industry can figure it out right now. And I think that's like from an overarching thing. It's like, what happened here? Like, I really want to know what happened here and how this came together, because I think that story is just as compelling as the story of the game. So
I did read something from one of the developers who said like, if they weren't independent, if they went to a big studio, this game would have never been made. So, I mean, that's saying something.
Yeah.
It does remind me of a lot of, I'm sorry, I got a phone call. It does remind me a lot of the way you describe the performance and the really well detailed graphics and whatnot. It reminds me a lot of the Uncharted 1, like, because that was a big, like, impressive thing for the PlayStation at the time. And I will always remember like how they did it, because it gave the illusion of going left and right, but that's the most linear game you'll ever play. Like, you can only go right. You really only go forward, but it gave the illusion of going left and right, because the way they leveled, they detailed the levels, the way they filled the space. I think Expedition 33 does similar tricks. Like, the environments are, if you stop and stare at something, it's not that detailed. It's not that great. But
no, yeah.
As you move through it, it all blends together perfectly. Like, it looks and feels like it's bigger and denser than it is, when really it's not. I mean, like the way they really know their tips and tricks and on how to develop a game over there. Like, they know how to work with limited resources and kind of say smoke and mirror you through what looks to be a very good looking game.
Yeah, and that's I think, and we've said this 1,000 times, you know, it's, we have hit that critical mass of just like, not every game needs to be 80 hours, not every game needs to be open world, not every game needs all these mechanics. Like, we're hitting that tipping point where even people are pushing back again. I'm just like, I just don't need another Assassin's Creed. I don't need another Far Cry. Like, I just don't. I do not need another open world game kind of thing. And this is sort of the perfect example of that. It's like, you can still lie to us, you know, like, this is an open world game. That is a true fact. But that doesn't mean what it used to mean anymore. Like, you think open world and it's like, okay, that means Assassin's Creed. Like, no, it just means that there's a world, it's open, and you can kind of explore it. And it's not this super vast, like, you know, 10 miles deep. It's like, no, it's only about 2 inches deep and 100 miles wide, but that's okay. Like, that's totally fine. Like you said, that's probably part of the secret, though, too, is there's really only, you know, like 20 to 25 areas to explore. And so versus 150, you know, like, right. So they had time to focus on those 25, and really, you know, only 15 to 16 of those really have any depth, but they're very smart about using their space. They're very smart about constraints, about not going too deep. Like, it's just well thought out. And so we'll wrap up here. Like, I do want to talk about the story a little bit. Like I said, no spoilers. And you said you're about to reach the end of Act 2.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm just curious, like, you know, how do you feel so far?
I am very engrossed in the story. I think it's very well told. I think it's very well paced. I'm genuinely loving the story. I truly didn't mean to downplay it by saying it's basic or you've seen it in other RPGs. It's just a matter of I do enjoy getting that feedback from people, just kind of like, oh my god, this happened, this character did this. I'm like, that is anime storytelling. Like this, like right. I'm glad you guys are on board. But again, like, the way it's presented is just just a lot better. Like it is, again, to compare it to Final Fantasy Rebirth, like when characters are talking, they're actually emoting, they're actually moving. It's not like Cloud sitting there, dumb-faced, you know, just going, duh,
right,
to whatever Tifa says. Like, no, like, these people are animated.
And then he just holds up around a thumb. He's like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that part. Like, no, like, these characters are, like getting into, like, real arguments about real things, you know? Like, they're really stressed out.
That key right there, like, it's... You know, there's a couple lines that Lune says to the crowd and stuff like that. And it hits, you know, like, it's just like, okay, you know, like, it's, I don't want to say it's an adult story, 'cause it's not like, it's not what I want to say. But it's not treating me like an idiot. And that's, what's the best way I can put this?
No, they're taking it seriously in it, but they're also, but yeah. not that other RPGs aren't. I mean, Final Fantasy takes their story seriously. The difference is, this is also presented seriously. Like, these aren't
right.
Tiggle like, bitty the best anime characters trying to say like, oh no, the world's ending, I need to use my magic spells. Like, no, these are like real people, like going through real problems. And like, I mean, one of my favorite conversations so far in the game was, and again, no spoilers, but it's with two characters, and again, the goal is to kill the painter, but you find out there might be more to it. And like the other character's kind of like, do you really want to do this? And he gives his reason why you don't want to do this. And then as the player, as the audience, you genuinely have to ponder, like, do I want to do this? Like, is this the right thing to do? Like, where, you know, like, it's, and it plays it very straight. Like, it's not, so to the point where the funny moments are earned and it's actually like funny. You know, like,
right.
It's not like putting Cloud in a dress.
Right. And it's, I think, like, and this is a compliment, and I don't, like, the best way I can explain it is, I have played every Kingdom Hearts game. Every single one.
Oh, well, here we go.
I don't know what happens in Kingdom Hearts. Like, I know some of it. I can give you the basic throughput, but I have no clue. You know, like, it thinks it's more intelligent than it is. And then you have to ask that question of just like, am I stupid or is the game just overly stuffed, you know, kind of thing. And so you can go online and somebody's figured it out. You know, somebody's figured out the story. But it's like Kingdom Hearts is a strange thing, right? Like because it doesn't know if it's it started out when I was on the PS2. I was like 12. And then by the time the third one came out, I was in my 20s. So it's just like, it has this weird thing where it has to be a story for everybody, but not really. But then it gets super complicated and everything's always open-ended. Like, always. There's always a teaser at the end of it. They're making a Kingdom Hearts 4. I genuinely have no idea what that's about. And then I look at something like Rebirth, like you said, which is another Nomura title. It's like, this game is Nomura if he was not over the top. Like, it's a very serious story and it takes itself seriously, but also it's Kojima through and through because it takes itself very seriously. It's not afraid to put a 10-minute cutscene in front of you when it thinks it's important, and it takes twists and turns that you might see coming, like, because you start to figure out the ridiculousness of it, but then it still sticks the landing. Like, even if you figure out what's going on, which I had to say that I knew what was going to happen is not fair. I had an inkling of something that was going to happen, but I didn't know why it was going to happen. And then it sort of like takes a left turn, it takes a right turn, and then it does a 360. And it's like, but I was still engaged the whole time and I wasn't ever lost. And that's the key to me is I don't say it's easy to lose me in a game because like it's not, but like when it comes to story, I don't like things that are just so nuanced for the sake of being nuanced. And this game has that feel at times of like you feel like it's just gonna be so nuanced, but it doesn't. Somehow it explains everything to you, and you're like, oh, okay. Like you might not like where it goes some of the places, but you're at least gonna understand it.
It's definitely anime storytelling, but without the anime, I guess. Like
right.
It does it well. Like it's like you said. I think the Kojima perspective is pretty spot on. It's like it's the Metal Gear Solid without Nano machines. It's a bit more grounded in its magical fantasy world.
Right. And what I will say is we'll talk about this off the air because I don't want to say too much. It's like I'm genuinely curious because I know a lot of people at the end of Act Two, they were just like, eh, and I'm just like, I get that, but I've told them like keep playing. Because I understand where you're coming from, because like we've all been there of just like the thing happens and you're just like, and then I was sort of like that, but then it stuck the landing and it's just like, it's important that I just say that from me, I guess, in my soul. It nails storytelling in a way that I think is, I look at Sea of Stars and you and I, you know, debated about Sea of Stars for a long time, but I think we did come to the consensus like, the story is good, but it's also very juvenile at times. This is like the antithesis of that. Like, it's very good and it's not juvenile, so therefore I respect it a lot more. Anybody can play Sea of Stars and figure it out, and I still think it's a great story, but you can obviously see where they took, shortcuts, where it was written differently than something like this. I just did not expect that from this game. I really did not expect to open up this game and start playing it and like, I won't say like get hit in the feels like grown man tears, but like there were times I was just like, Jesus,
see that part doesn't surprise me just because of looking at the art style. This is what this art style genuinely like if you ever read something or watch it, like especially movies that have this kind of art style, it's usually that it's usually a Shakespeare tragedy. Like 9 times out of 10. So like as soon as I picked it up and was moving through the world and really engaged with the art style, I'm like, yeah, this is gonna be a heavy sobber soon. Like, it's just a matter of time. Like you can't tell stories like this stories that will look like this either end with pain, death, and torture or two people out to go get a baguette sandwich. Like it's no in between. I do want to say there's one thing though for people that are playing and that will play it. As great as the combat is, as much as I truly, truly like it, truly, truly adore it, it's not slight against the game. I'm just saying it's still a 9 out of 10. Don't come at me. Relax. I will just say there are some glitches and hiccups when it comes to the button presses, specifically the counters and the parries, because I did have to switch off of computer to a controller on the Xbox because the hitting keys on the keyboard is enough of a difference to where I do suggest playing on an Xbox controller. Or PS controller if you can, because I felt like I was hitting this at the right time, hitting counters at the right time just wasn't happening or wasn't registering. And I think it's a good situation. I switch over, I do feel a difference. And then on top of that, there's still just enough time. So I'm just like, I know I nailed that one. Like even if I was slightly late, I was slightly late before as well though. So like there's something right. a little off sometimes, and it will annoy you. But I only want to mention that because as gamers we are all hard headed creatures, and we're all gonna blame ourselves for saying I need to get better. It's like you're probably doing just fine. You might it may have been a game this 1 out of 50th like button press.
Yeah, and I never tried on a keyboard, but I do know that the keyboard controls in general were kind of like, people were like, nah, it really wasn't made with keyboard in mind. And am I wrong? It tells you to play with a controller, doesn't it? Like, and the,
it
and
probably
the intro
does.
Screen, it's, yeah, I think it
probably
does. I could be making that, up. But I will say, yeah, no, there was definitely times where it's just like, I feel like I hit that. But then other times, like, I'm locked in and I never miss a parry. So it's just like,
right.
What happened here? So I don't know. You know, maybe it was hitching. You know, maybe it wasn't. I couldn't see it kind of thing. I also wonder, because the console does have a 30 frames mode, and I immediately was like, nope. That just seems like a bad idea. And so it's 60 frames. But, you know, being on a computer, maybe I was able to, you know, combat that because just more frames, you know, you have more, less latency kind of thing. So, but it's, I'd be curious, are you playing on normal or...
I started off on normal, yeah.
Yeah. So I do know, like, the harder mode has an even tighter parry window. Like, I'm
That's
not
ridiculous.
A masochist. Yeah, so it's like, I don't want to do that.
This is already one of the tightest parry windows I've played ever. Like,
right.
And it's a turn-based game. Like, it's kind of nuts. Like, Sekiro is more forgiving.
Well, what's...
Well, actually, if I were to compare it to... Sekiro's not even more forgiving. It's more... For
consistent.
Sekiro fans out there, yes, yeah, it's absolutely more consistent. Like, they like it's like you like Sekiro. If you miss a parry, that's 100% your fault. Like every time.
And it's, I do think it's kind of funny of people getting like, you know, washed by this game. I'm just like, no, the parry system sucks. Like I nailed it, and it's just like, I'm with you a little bit, but at the same time, it's like. The fact that they put in like a story mode, which opens up the window, and I put it on story mode just to check it out one time. I was like, let's see how much easier this is. It opens it up quite a bit, kind of thing. And so that also, I think that also probably lends to the enemy design. I'm wondering if certain enemies have different parry windows too. Like if it's actually longer or shorter, and maybe that's what we're feeling, since there are difficult quote difficulties. That means that like that parry window is, I won't say manipulatable, but it is editable. Whereas like something like a Dark Souls, there's only one difficulty. So like you're not messing with that parry window. That's my inkling, is that there's just some enemies that require a little bit tighter, you know, whatever timing based on their attacks or whatever. But I also will say is like, I'm sure I'm not the only one. How many times I feel stupid with this game because it's just like, I know this guy's going to do this. Got to wait for the wind up. As soon as he winds up, I flinch. I parry. I get nailed. And I'm like, okay, I got to parry this. Nope, I get nailed again. Okay, I got to, nope, get nailed again. And it's just like, I know what he's going to do, yet I still suck at it. Like, and it's...
It's so funny to me
every time.
That genuinely annoys me. Like... It also annoys me in Souls games that the fake wind up, like, leave me alone.
Right.
Stop doing that. Like, it's like you have these giant characters in these Souls games, these Souls likes, and also an Expedition, and like they jump at you, and like, first of all, they jump at you, so you want to parry immediately. It's like,
right,
jumping at me. And it's like, nope, I'm stopping right 2 feet in front of you. Like, what are you doing that for?
Yeah, that's Dark Souls though. Like, that's, it's got that Dark Souls vibe. And again, I respect it because I'm not a Dark Souls person, but I understand why people like those games. But no, it's trolling you. Like, the game is trolling you, and it's, I'm like, oh, like, God, I know what he's gonna do, but like, I'm stupid. Like, I'm freaking stupid. So yeah, it's, play this game. It's fantastic. I think it's ironic. Like, out of Towerborn, Flintlock, and this one, I thought Flintlock was going to be a lock. You know?
That's like, crazy. That's nuts.
Yeah, and like Expedition 33 is just like, nah, it's too good to be true. Like, something's off about this game. Like, nope, there's nothing off about it at all. And I'm genuinely happy that it exists. It's like, man, you don't get games like this often. And for it to sort of come out the way that it has and the reception it has, like, a lot of people were annoyed that because Oblivion got dropped right next to it, people are like, oh my God, why did Microsoft do this? But it doesn't really seem to have affected it. Like, it's still taken off. And
but also, you know, Microsoft, why did you do that? Also,
yeah, like, that's like, what,
like,
were you thinking?
Stupid.
Yeah, yeah, I don't,
like, because if the game didn't get that kind of, this kind of word of mouth, like, it would have tanked. Like, it would have been the best game of the year that no one's played. Like, they're like,
yeah,
they're just dumb people at Microsoft. Like,
their release cadence is so strange, and like, you know, like, it's so, like, they made the decision to push Avowed to this year, which was probably a good idea, but then it's like you dropped Doom the Dark Ages, and like you just started dropping games left and right. You just dropped Oblivion out of nowhere. Then obviously you don't own Expedition 33, but you dropped that out of nowhere. You haven't marketed it. You dropped South of Midnight right next to this. And it's just like, what are you doing? Stop. Like, just stop. Space it out a little bit. And then they'll go like 9 months without a release. I'm just like, I don't.
It's like the entire industry was scared GTA 6 was actually coming out this year. And they're like, let's put out everything before November, because we don't want anything to go up against that. But like, guys,
which I get that, but at the same time, like, July and August exist. Like, GTA is not coming out in July, you know, like, it's just not going to happen. So yeah. Expedition 33, play it. Phenomenal time. So let's move on to this email and then we'll get out of here. Sorry for that abrupt ending again. We cut right there just because we ended up talking for about 45 minutes about Xbox in general and pricing. And so if you want to tune into that, I'll be posting that here in a couple days. But thanks for listening. Hope you play Expedition 33. It's quite good. So definitely let us know what you think about it. 574-651-9256. And we will see you next time.